This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Hi, this is Dan Andrews, and you're listening to Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9.
Indeed you are. Thank you, Dan. This is Macca and Isaac. You're listening to Saturday Magazine live on Joy 94.9. Isaac.
Yes, Macca. We are going to talk to Harriet Shing, Minister for Equality. Hello, Harriet. How are you?
Hi there. Lovely, lovely to join you. I'm really well. Look at the sunshine today. It's so gorgeous to have some spring weather.
Yeah, it's wonderful today.
It's actually good weather for a menagerie, isn't it, Harriet?
Now, Macca, I do love that every time we catch up on Joy, that we do always start with animals. Yes, indeed, the animals are out frolicking today. I'm going to be spending some time tackling some of the spring growth in the garden. So I'm going to have a lot of help There's going to be a lot of spectating and hopefully everyone will have a bit of fun this afternoon and get out and get some fresh air and some sunshine. But, yeah, I hope everyone out there is also getting to enjoy some of this absolutely stunning weather.
And it is, and you know, when you're working in the garden, and of course animals are particularly interested, because everything that you weed or whatever, they'll want to inspect, won't they, or eat.
Well, half of the challenge that I have is when I'm dragging green foliage and branches and all sorts of stuff around down to to where I'm going to burn them off or getting them into compost, everyone always follows me. So there's invariably some kind of random canine donkey conga line that basically troops all over the block with me, and it's really, really lovely, but it's not terribly helpful for productivity. Seems we come in at the end of the day and we've not done as much work, but everybody's happy.
Yeah, everyone's having fun, so that's good, I suppose.
Exactly.
So Harriet, you were the first openly lesbian member in Parliament. Can you tell us what's that like? What's the challenges that you face?
I think it's really been about helping to create space for other people to also be open and to be assertive and to be articulate about making sure that our communities are part of decision making, mm-hmm. that we are part of the really, really extensive spectrum of investments that are happening across the state. We've gone from I think me as the first out woman in the Victorian Parliament to I think the Parliament's now got about 6 or 7 out folk, which is absolutely fantastic. It really does make a very big difference for our communities to see more of ourselves reflected in our parliaments. And it then means that, you know, when and as we're out and about, there's a lot more reflection of communities in communities. And I'm also Regional Development Minister, so I spent a lot of time in rural and regional Victoria. We spent a lot of time investing in regional and rural activation programs for the Victoria's Pride work. And it also it means that when and as there are really difficult times, including, everything from drag story time and a rise in transphobia and homophobia, that there is that sense of reflection in what our parliaments are doing to counteract that. But it's also, you know, there's a lot more colour, there's a lot more diversity in our parliaments, I think, than there ever has been. We've got a long way to go, but we've come a long way too.
Yeah, so representation is really, really important. What kind of advice would you give for someone from our community that wants to get into politics?
I would say that it's so important to find good mentors, find people with whom you can have conversations in a really safe way about what you want to achieve. Find people who will cheer you on. Get yourself a support crew and a pit crew who want to see you succeed. And it's also about making sure that you don't listen to the white noise that we all have that says you can't do something for all of the reasons that, you know, I suppose we've probably internalised our entire lives. There are different ways to get involved in public life, in politics, and they don't have to be in our parliaments. In fact, there are some incredible things happening in our communities, every day. It's been so wonderful to catch up with people from, you know, every place across the state, whether it's the Queerways work and the mapping of Geelong's queer history, or the work that's happening with within our libraries and the event that I went to and spoke at during the week at the State Library of Victoria to talk about inclusive training, the work that's happening at the Gippsland Pride Hub, the first Pride Hub in Gippsland that we opened just a couple of weeks ago, in partnership with Thorn Harbour Health and a range of others, to see what's happening on the ground is to see leadership in action. So I would say that if you want to get involved, if there are things that are dear to your heart, then absolutely hurl yourself into it. Find good people who can respect and help amplify your enthusiasm. Don't be afraid to learn. Don't be afraid to fail. And always take what you can from every experience you have, and listen and look to the people who you admire for guidance about how to make your own way in the world.
Where in Gippsland is the Pride Hub, Harriet?
It's in Trafalgar.
Oh, Trafalgar.
Yeah, it is absolutely brilliant. So we've basically seen a really wonderful partnership. So again, bringing several services together alongside funding from the state government. We've got a really wonderful, it's a house that has been converted. So it's one of the properties from West Gippsland Hospital. And it is so welcoming. It's so wonderful. Within 20 minutes of opening, the first person had walked through the door looking for conversation and information about how to support a family member. So, you know, there's a lot of work happening to activate events and communities, and these bricks and mortar spaces are absolutely important as well. And wherever I go across rural and regional Victoria, you can see that where we activate spaces and enable people to come together, creating those safe places for people really does help people to be safe and to be able to be candid and to talk about what they need. And I've been everywhere from Maryborough to Mildura and Shepparton to Geelong, and it happens time and time again because of the extraordinary work of so many groups and LGBTIQ plus folk in our communities who just create the most amazing spaces for people to be exactly who we are.
And it is really important. I'm glad you touched on that, Harriet, that, regional Victoria, that all the work that is going on there in diversity and equality and giving people the opportunity to access services is so important, because obviously, you know, I live in the city and access to services, you know, is very good. But once you get outside the metro area, you know, it's a lot more difficult. So, you know, I'm really, really pleased that Pride Hub has opened in Trafalgar. I know Trafalgar well, having come from Gippsland. And it's, it's already, attracting people to it. It's a great initiative.
It's also really important to continue that work to help organisations that are inclusive within the programs and services that they deliver. So, again, we've tried really hard with this fund that we've got across the Equality Portfolio to help people across, firstly, whole of life. Building the work that we've done with Safe Schools right through to the Pride in Ageing pilot, which we're developing, but also events and festivals, and also the middle of Melbourne right out to the edge of the state. We know that access to healthcare, access to gender-affirming care and support and information later in life is as important as making sure we've got good access to information at Safe Schools. But we've always got more work to do, and having those partnerships, including with a number of really, really active councils across Victoria, has been a game changer. And it's also about making sure that we're able to have some really difficult conversations about the pain and the trauma that we're seeing really occur because of this rise in transphobia, yeah. By homophobia, intersex discrimination, you name it. We like it or not, our communities are a lightning rod for an awful lot of hate from other quarters, and it's easy to direct that in our direction. But again, leaning into that, having those conversations, and then doing what we can to create solutions, but also cultural change within our community as a whole is so central to what a good government response looks like.
We've only, excuse me, Harriet, we've only got a few minutes left because we're gonna run out of time. I wanted to ask, when you're out and about, Harriet, and particularly in regional Victoria, what are you hearing or what sort of discussions are you having about the Voice referendum? What are people saying to you?
The Voice is something which, just to be clear, I am absolutely in favour of. I think there's a lot of desire for people to learn more and to know more. When I was in Sale a couple of weeks ago, I was speaking at a new energy conference for renewable energy and opportunities for industry and community and jobs into the future. And then afterwards I went and had a few conversations around Sale and spoke with people and did a street stall about the Yes campaign. There's a lot of misinformation out there about what the Voice is actually intending to do, and it's so important that when we talk about it, we're clear that this is not a set of decisions that enable a veto. Is not about decision making being bedded into the constitution. It's actually about making sure that the oldest continuous culture on earth is recognised in the constitution, but also that there is a pathway for First Nations voices to be heard. And that doesn't mean that every conversation will go in one particular way. It's about the conversation being able to happen. And this is where I think one of the things I've been trying to emphasise with people, and that there is a really important focus on, is people actually finding out what the Voice is actually about, rather than listening to conversation that just says that there isn't enough reason to proceed with a constitutional recognition that provides for a voice. And First Nations communities have actually called for this. This is not something that's been plucked out of the ether. It's about saying, how do we deliver on the Uluru Statement from the heart? How do we make sure that we recognise not just pain and trauma and the need for healing, but what is a pathway for conversation and for respect and listening look like when so many of the things that we've done, whilst well-intentioned, haven't worked? We still have so far to go in changing those outcomes, in changing that opportunity for representation. And this is the model that First Nations communities have said is important, and that's why the question is framed as it is.
Harriet, good morning. It's Paul here. I'm just listening to you speaking there, and I think I've also seen a lot of misinformation and disinformation on The Voice. Is there going to come a point in politics in Australia, either federally or at the state level, where we try and make it an offence to intentionally give wrong information, particularly in the context of a debate that, you know, has such importance? But I think, you know, we've seen a lot of stuff in political campaigning where people have intentionally misled or said things that are ambiguous. Do you think that we need to have, an honest conversation with our politicians about if they are going to say things in the public, then they have to be fact-checked?
I think that's a really tough one, because there will always be people who say that they're in a position to assert parts of a debate as being as relevant as other parts of a debate, and that they have not, you know, exactly the same right to be arguing those things as everybody else. I think misinformation and disinformation has been part of public debate politics, since the dawn of time. The challenge that we have, I think, as much as anything else, is that we've now got various platforms with which people share information, and it can rapidly become something that snowballs into a campaign that everybody takes for granted the fact of the situation and the foundation of an argument, when in fact that foundation isn't correct and those facts, you know, aren't actually facts. There's a global movement toward those sorts of things, and it's also about finding it difficult to go back to first principles and to make it clear that there's an important set of principles that need to underpin any mature debate. And we saw that in the conversion and suppression practices legislation, that people were arguing that there was going to be a ban on people being able to talk with LGBTIQ plus people about their identities, that that in fact that wasn't going to be allowed, that, that it would become a criminal offence. And that's how people will interpret what those changes are, when in fact the reality of those legal changes was that it was about exerting pressure and about seeking to, under the guise of counselling, cause somebody to want to, or to have no choice but to embark upon a course of engagement with a medical professional or a community organisation around identifying parts of LGBTIQ plus identity or culture seen as wrong. And so you can see what there is a nuance to these conversations that mean that misinformation and disinformation will always be there. There are points at which it becomes so serious and so egregious that it may well be an offence under existing law, but it's a tricky one. And that's why, you know, again, we see so many defamation suits being launched. It's another reason why we're proceeding with the development of anti-vilification legislation. It's why we'll continue to do the work around amendments to the Equal Opportunity Act, because, you know, there is a creeping preparedness to accept certain things as fact, where in fact they're just not. And the groundswell of campaigns, I think, particularly on social media and various mass media platforms, means that that's part, I think, of the world in which we live now.
Harriet, speaking about disinformation, it's easy to tell people that you should always find out the truth. But how do you actually do that? How do you identify what's the truth and what's disinformation?
Well, again, if we had an answer to that in the remaining minute that we have this morning, then we'd be solving many of the world's problems. It's one of those situations where, again, it comes back to helping people to access information to correct misinformation. The challenge that we have with that is that it's not nearly as interesting for people to go back to first principles as it is to continue on a trajectory that enables people to spread alarm or to whip up a frenzy. Whipping up frenzies is a very easy prospect once you start to gather momentum. Taking things back to first principles often involves people unpicking the reasons for the conclusions that they reach. And that's there's nothing particularly comparatively interesting in that. You don't get to run over the hill with flaming torches while you're in the process of trying to get a better sense of the fact. Whereas if you can actually go off on this campaign related tangent, that involves people to throw all caution to the wind. And facts aren't about throwing all caution to the wind. They're actually about evidence, and they're about understanding the detail of things, which isn't a particularly interesting or fascinating thing for people to be prompted to do. And that's why the voice is so important when you hear people cast doubt on what that looks like and what it means. Do the work to understand what this actually is, that it is providing a pathway for a conversation, not for outcomes, but for a process to try to fix how it is that we've gotten to this position where, despite all of our best intentions, we still have some of the worst outcomes in the world, some of the worst disadvantage in the world for the oldest continuous culture on Earth.
Harriet, we're out of time.
it happens so quickly.
I know. It? Now, good luck with the menagerie, and I hope some of it gets to compost or, you know, to burn off before they all want to have a sniff of it.
I think we all know that that's not going to happen.
I know.
Thank you for your good wishes nonetheless. Yes, enjoy the weekend, everybody. Don't forget the sunscreen.
Exactly. Thank you so much. We've been speaking with Harriet Shing, Minister for Equality and Regional Victoria. Stay with us on SatMag with Macca and Isaac. We'll be back with you in just a sec.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.